It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
You look very familiar. Have I seen you before?
I don't know. Do you ever get over to that Java House salad
with
place?
Heirloom Salad Company?
You ever get over there?
I do, in fact.
Oh, I was over there just about an hour ago.
That would explain it.
Hmm.
I had to drop you off at your house and was like, I'll talk to you again in like a half hour. All right. We had lunch with Dave a bit because after canceling for three times, I was like, you know what? Let's try something weird and actually show up. And I did. And it was a good time.
Even though the roads were actually not that great, or
the roads were terrible, but it's warming up enough that the roads weren't that bad once we left.
Right.
It was a lovely time. Yeah. Now there's a bunch of topics we can't talk about because if we do, 1/6 of our population will already have heard
it all. Yeah.
But that's okay because we have something else we have to talk about. Because it was like an hour after we finished recording last time that I was like, oh crap, we didn't talk about the Murderville holiday special.
Right.
Because you finally watched it.
Yeah.
And you were texting me about it. And that was a very fun thing. You'd be like, oh my God, this happened. I'm like, just wait. And then you text, you're like, ah! And I tell Trish, I think he's at this point. But we need to not spoil things.
Right.
Suffice it to say, the Murderville holiday special is quite funny.
Yeah, very.
And it has Murderville, for those of you who don't remember, is the show where Will Arnett is a homicide cop and somebody gets killed. And every episode he has a new trainee partner and it's some celebrity. And the celebrity has not been given a script. And so the celebrity is forced to improv their way through solving the mystery. And that's the holiday special, is just a longer version of that. But somebody was playing Santa and got killed at a Christmas party. And so that becomes a whole deal. It's very Christmas themed. And it has two different interns because it is longer. It's like an hour and a half or something. Maya Rudolph and Jason Bateman. Sean Hayes plays the body. Now, this is important for reasons. So, William's watching this, and he's like, Will Arnett and Jason Bateman are so good together because they know each other. And I say to William, you know that Jason Bateman and Will Arnett and Sean Hayes do an award-winning podcast called Smartless. And William was like, I didn't know that. And I'm like, yeah, that's why there's this whole thing. And that helps. They have that sort of history there. The part that's funny, and I told you earlier today, there's a funny bit here. Your specific text was, Jason Bateman and Will Arnett are so good together and not just in Arrested Development. Until you said that, I had forgotten they were in Arrested Development together.
I had too, actually.
And I just finished watching Arrested Development again a week or two ago.
Wow.
And in my head I was just like, no, they do that podcast, that's why they have that. And then I was like, oh yeah, they also were siblings for many years on an award-winning sitcom. I forgot about that. And it's so weird for that. It's like the back wall got knocked out and the building you're in is so much larger than you thought it was.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, they do. They have all of that history I didn't think about. And so, yeah, but I think, as we talked about before, it is an example of what you were talking about, of what potentially future seasons will be like. I feel like first season of Murderville, it's funny, but it's very much a none of us have any idea what the fuck is happening. And I think we're hitting the point where they're aware of the premise and feel more confident in screwing with it. It more so than most episodes of Murderville, this goes off the rails hard. Like throughout.
Yeah.
There's the trailer had it, in fact, because originally it's Jason Bateman, and then we bring in Maya Rudolph. And there's a point where they are attempting to catch up Maya Rudolph with what has happened so far. And she just loses her shit because it's so ridiculous when you just spell it out there. So it is for somebody who really enjoyed the structure, it is somehow less structured, but funnier. Also, fun fact, the mayor in this one is played by a woman I knew I recognized, and I looked her up, and she plays Captain Angela, whatever her name is, in Space Force.
Oh.
She's essentially the POV, the original POV for Space Force.
Oh.
And so it was fun to see her. And there's a couple other people. This frequently happens. They'll get friend, like Kurt Brownholler does a whole thing in this, and I don't think he's involved in the making of the show or anything. He's just an established comedian who can improv just fine and does whatever. So there's little things like that and stuff, but it's a real good time. Y'all should check it out. It's on Netflix. It's its own thing. Like, don't go to Murderville. It's Murderville Holiday Special or something like that. But it's quite funny. Highly recommend it.
It was very good.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast that happens twice, but we only recorded the second time. I am Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 616.
616, the actual number of the beast based on certain translations.
Mm.
Okay. There is an art, certain biblical scripture translations claim that the number of the beast is in fact 616, not 666.
Okay. So our podcast is
dry run. I know you're more excited about 666, but
our podcast is the real beast.
Yes.
Everybody else, they don't know.
We're the real beast.
Yep. The greatest lie we ever told is that we don't exist.
Yep. And we told that one real good. Real good. It, almost everyone believed us.
I mean, if that's our standard for success, we've made it.
All right. For those of you just joining us, Happy New Year. This is the first podcast of 2023. It's going to be the same, though. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And our wonderful listeners and the occasional Nigerian prince with too much money writes into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever they want. And then the hat sends it to us. We read them when we feel like it. That's it. There's no deeper meaning. Just two white guys who felt they weren't given enough voice in their society and decided to do something about it. So New Year. How was your New Year?
It was good. As I told you before, we had kids over. I had the grandson here, and they didn't know if they were going to stay late, but they did, and then they stayed over, which was fun. Having them here, but you know, we just watched Bill and Ted because son-in-law hadn't seen it, and I'm not sure, I didn't get to tell you this, I'm not sure he liked it very much.
What, Eli or Dom?
Yeah, Eli, the son-in-law, he didn't, I don't think he liked it.
I think
it
you did
much.
Actually mention that. It's not a great film. It is unique. It is clever. It is an idea that did not exist at the time. It's not mind-blowing.
Well, if I had to guess what would have bothered him about it, because he usually liked, you know, it was his idea for us to watch Tremors and everything. He usually likes this kind of stuff as far as it being cheesy or corny or whatever. I would say it was probably the pacing of it. I mean, I noticed watching
and the lack of Michael Gross.
But I noticed watching with them that the pacing was not like movies today. I mean, you know, that it wasn't just gag after gag after gag. I mean, you know, sometimes someone would say something.
Minimal CG.
And there were several seconds of nothing happening. I think you were supposed to be watching the the reaction of the other person or something. But even for me, I was like, why is this going so slow? If they hadn't been there, I don't think I would have noticed it. But when you're watching with someone who you know likes to see things go a little bit quicker, I think that was probably the main
issue. And just in general, if you know the through line of a movie, you're like, here's where the joke drops, and then you become more aware, oh, wow, there's longer stretches.
But I also talked earlier to you about, and maybe this is something our listeners will have a comment about, how when I was growing up, there were two camps. There was the Bill and Ted camp and the Wayne's World camp. And so people saw these two things as trying to sort of go after the same demographic, but in very different ways. And so people would often pick a side. And
I just missed both of them.
And even though I don't usually pick sides, I was definitely a Wayne's World type. And what I said about that was that Wayne and Garth were like, they weren't stupid. They knew stuff. But Bill and Ted like are dumb, I guess. And I mean, I still think it's funny. I still watched all the movies and everything, but if I had to pick, and I didn't have to, but I went ahead and picked anyway, yeah, I would pick Wayne's World because I just
young, brash William actually picked a side in a hypothetical debate that no one else was having.
You didn't pick a side though when we talked about it. You don't have a.
I have never seen World movie.
That's right.
And I have only very recently seen the first Bill and Ted movie, and it was fine. I didn't see the second one.
Second one's better.
So I choose neither. I've heard the second one is really the pinnacle of the form.
Second one was pretty good. I mean, and I'm not a fan of any of them, like really. It's not like, oh, I have to watch these every year or something, but I did watch them in the day and I did have opinions about them and I liked them okay. And I preferred Wayne.
was like Melcher one side and Dallas the other side, like that.
I mean, they did that with everything else, so probably, yeah.
I mean, David brought up the Sharks versus the Jets, which I found hilarious because I'm like, that's just a Romeo and Juliet spoof, so why don't you just say the Capulets and the Montagues? But that just proves that I'm a coastal elite in my heart.
And I have a butter towel on my hat. The idea so that pretty much tells
you
the
rest. I looked at the hat a lot because you took the hat off in the Urban Salad Company, and I discovered one of two things. Either you put a hat on while your hair's still wet from the shower, or when you put a hat on, you keep it on for like 4 days because your hair was very specific underneath the hat. Like it was set in a very certain way. Not look accidental.
I think the option that you're missing is having the hat on while shoveling snow and getting kind of hot while you're doing that.
Oh, and that's a version of hair wet. All right. Still though, it was, it looked like a deliberate design. It didn't look good, but it looked intentional.
Mm-mm, no, it's just what happens when you shovel snow with a baseball hat. It's just
magic. Yeah. All right. Anything else? You're still free from your school.
And I was going to mention, to Dave Avid, so I hope he watches and remembers, because one of the reasons I brought up the Flanagan stuff was because I was going to mention
that. Oh, yeah, we really did drop that conversation, didn't we?
I was going to mention we watched Midnight Club. He made a limited, well, I don't know if it's a limited series or not, because it looks like they think they're going to get another season.
I guess I didn't know that was him. Mm-hmm. Good-ish things.
Okay, well, what I would say about it is I don't think you would like it because of the theme. I think it would just be a downer for you, but maybe not.
There are those.
If you're going to, before you watch it, maybe read up a little bit on what the background, the premise of it is, and see if that's even something that you're okay with. If you're the kind of person, and one, I was kind of trying to get at this with Dave, if you're the kind of person that really likes to see young talent doing really well, like acting well.
Oh, and I do not.
Then you'll like this, because I did. I liked watching these young actors just really do a fantastic job.
I think
job.
That's the thing, is it very smacks young adult to me in a way that I'm not generally interested in.
No question. I mean, it's based on books that some other person wrote that I'm pretty sure were young adult books. No question.
But I mean, we did the Fear Street one, so.
But these young actors do a very good job. The premise is such that when there's angst, it doesn't feel like teen angst. It feels like perfectly legitimate adult angst. So to me, that's not annoying. I mean,
good thing given your future career, that would be rough.
No, I mean, in like shows and movies and stuff, when I'm hearing a story and the person is going through anxiety and it's really just because they're 16 or something. Again, if they were my client, that would be one thing. I would have total empathy for that. But like in a story I'm watching for entertainment, I mean, no, I'm not going to be entertained by someone whining about the fact that Sarah didn't, you know, talk to him in the hallway or whatever. I was like, who cares? I didn't care about Sarah's that when I was bitch. I didn't care that about that when I was a teenager. So
and that's why Sarah never talked to you.
But that is why Sarah never talked to me. Which was actually fine with me. But anyway,
just a psycho.
But when these young people are experiencing, you know, drama, I mean, there's a reason for it that goes with the story and it makes sense. And I think most people would be able to relate to it. And these young actors portray it very authentically, I think, and very well. Flanagan is a good visual storyteller. So there's a lot of that in it. I wouldn't say overall that the writing is very even. Like if you noticed any problems with Midnight Mass, you might spot some of those same problems in this if you watched it. But if you like his stuff, I don't think you'll be sorry you watched it. And again, I really appreciated the performances and discovering some actors that I didn't know. I mean, they've already been doing other things, but I didn't know them. And I was like, wow, this person's great. So, I mean, I would recommend it to anybody who likes his stuff mostly. I don't know if
Which
you don't.
Which in general I do.
Yeah, if you don't, I'm not sure it's going to be your thing. Or if there are certain themes that you don't want to, these aren't violent themes, by the way. These are, you know, these are kids going through things that some people just don't even want to watch fictional kids go through.
NFTs.
No, but I mean, the whole thing, I can say this because this isn't a spoiler. The whole thing takes place in a hospice. So I'll just put it like that. If you think that's going to be, you know, more than you can handle, which, you know, I'm on the edge of that myself. So I can understand that. But I thought it was okay. Actually, I thought it was quite good. But I think most people who are going to like it are people who like his stuff generally. And it's not, if you're looking for something that's, say, like Hill House, like scary or something, it's not that. I mean, there's supernatural elements or whatever, but it's not a scary thing like Hill House or whatever. It's more of a drama.
Also, it's on Netflix for those paying attention to that.
it's more of a drama.
It is also on Netflix.
Pretty well done. Yeah, on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, you can see it, you know, I guess, for like.
That's how Netflix works.
Without ads, without no extra charge or whatever. Sometimes some services you've got to, for some things you have to pay extra or watch it with ads or pay extra anyway. I mean, I'm not sure what all the streaming services are doing. They're still trying to figure out their business models, I guess. And with Netflix, if you
most
pay the monthly
of them,
fee, everything's for free.
Most of them have ad versions and not ad versions. Some of them, the ad version is free, some of them not. And in some versions, certain programming is behind a paywall and certain not. And yeah. Like, I don't think, for example, Hulu, there's anything that you can't watch if you just have the with ads version, but you still have to pay money for the with ads version. Peacock, for example, though, the free version with ads, there are certain things you can't watch.
Yeah.
So it's all over the place. But yeah, Netflix's model is always everything is for one cost, and that cost just keeps going up and up and up.
And you don't have to wait. If a series comes out, you can watch the whole thing.
Usually. They've started fucking with that a little bit.
Have they? Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Cabinet of Curiosities was two episodes released a night for four nights, and every once in a while they do things like that now.
Interesting.
When it's something that is to a specific time of year or something, sometimes they'll do that. They'll just release them.
How was your week?
Teasingly. It was all right. Actually, it was not great in general. The New Year's was great, but we just spent 4 days not doing jack. And so it's been hard to sort of get back into the real world.
Right.
And this was not helped by the fact that Tuesday night I had symptoms of what I recognize as UTI because I am a dude, and yet I've already had like three of them in my life.
Mm.
And so it was bad enough that I was like, I need to go to the quick care, the prompt care, the urgent care, depending on your region. And I went there and waited for a while so that the nurse practitioner could say, your sample had too much blood in it. We can't study it here. You need the big microscope, which is at the hospital. And then she and I kind of fought for a while because I didn't understand much. And finally, I was just like, do you recommend it? She's like, I think you should go to the ER. And I'm like, okay. She's like, it's probably going to be crowded though. You're probably going to have to wait a while. Yep. And so then I went to the ER for 9 hours.
To the university one.
Yes. Yeah. Although, in the many things I picked up by eavesdropping on people throughout the day and night in the waiting room, apparently Mercy, not really any better these days. That was their big advertising campaign for a long time, was that their ER, you didn't have to wait as long. But right now, everything is packed. And the ER is apparently for like the last month. Anytime you go in, you're going to wait a while because all the beds are full. And you have to wait until one's free. And especially with something like me, I mean, we got kids coming in here in ambulances and shit. I am definitely a low priority. But I saw people who every once in a while had to vomit into a bag, who could barely see straight, who were sitting with oxygen in wheelchairs. And they were still there for many hours after I showed up. And many of them had been there for many hours before I showed up. There are dedicated people who go around getting you blankets, pillows, something to drink, because people are just having to live in the waiting room. It's really scary and awful. And had I known beforehand, I probably would not have gone. I probably would have said, tomorrow morning will suck, and I'll call my doctor, and they'll get me in sometime today, and that'll be awful, but I don't think this is safe. I don't think my presence there was a good use of the resources. But by that point, I had been there. Sunk cost fallacy kind of kicked in. And also, on the one hand, I'm like, yes, other people should go first. But on the other hand, because I have my chart on my phone. So I get there. I wait about an hour. I get triaged. During the triage, I give a sample. I go back out in the waiting room. About an hour later, the results came in. And then I waited for seven more hours. And part of me was like they could just, somebody just needs to look at that and give me a prescription. And sure enough, when it was all said and done, they just gave me a prescription for the thing that fixed it 4 years ago when I had a previous one. Now I'm also getting a referral because they're like, this has happened enough. We want to make sure it's not something weird. But I don't know that it was worth the 9 hour process. So then, yesterday, I slept like all day. I went to bed at like 5 a.m. and then I woke up after a few hours, and then I was like, this was a bad idea. So then I went back to sleep. So this week is shot to hell. And then this time I woke up to take my wife to the work, to come home, to get showered, to get in the car, to come get you, to meet David for lunch at 10 a.m., to then hang around till like 12:45 to drop you off, to come back here to do this recording. And then after this, I have to get started on dinner. So again, today, bupkis happening. So very little has gotten done. I don't know that we've seen a movie I want to talk about. We did finish Welcome to Chippendales on Hulu, and it was a heck of a thing. I recommend it. It's also really interesting to look. Historically, it is very interesting. But also, just great performances all around. Kumail Nanjiani gave a performance like I've never seen him give before. It's really good. Somebody worked really hard at putting this together. The soundtrack is, of course, amazing because it's basically the late 70s through to the late 80s. So, yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed it a lot. It's like 8 episodes. But, yeah, I think that's what I've been playing. Horizon Forbidden West. I haven't played a ton yet. It's not getting me. It's not hooking me yet, but it will. Like, I know enough already that I'm like, this one. Like, with God of War, I was like, maybe it's not my thing. This one, I'm like, no, I just got to get back into this mindset. But, like, it feels like a Horizon game, and I loved the first one. And so,
yep.
But I'm only just starting. I'm dragging my feet a little bit. I think, like, I know when I get hooked, I'm going to be really hooked, but mostly I'm just watching a lot of terrible movies. I don't know why. I'm really jonesing right now. And I was telling you earlier, I think Tubi has finally figured out my brand. They've been sort of all over the place, but they're like, you want crappy movies that are kind of scary and kind of porny. And I was like, yep, basically. And so they're like, okay, we have these.
Oh, they have those. Okay.
They do. They have them. Like, Arby's has the meats. Tubi has that. Well, Tubi's are, there's, okay. And this won't relate to, as a person who is in favor of civil liberties and all this, maybe you can relate. You won't relate on a personal level.
Okay.
So, the 90s, at least maybe this is because of the age of, the 90s was when they really figured out softcore pornography. The 90s was when they were like, you know what? People just want a thing with boobs and people pretending to have sex, and maybe it'll be a little funny, maybe it'll be a little suspense, whatever. They really developed, there used to be genres like the erotic thriller or things like that, but this was like a genre that I'm like, no, this is just porn, but like low grade porn. And I was of the right age, and this was great. And there were a whole bunch of premium cable shows. Red Shoe Diaries started this process, but it became a whole thing. Canada had a ton of them. Whenever I would leave the country, I would discover this. And there were a lot of like movies, and the industry still sort of exists. The softcore porn feature length film industry. And there are some people who are, there's a lot of porn stars who also do that, but there are some people who are just sort of actors within that genre.
Okay.
But some point, I want to say in the early 2000s, it started with Amazon, but it's everywhere now. A lot of these companies that made a lot of these in the 90s decided to make edited versions that aren't like, they're not edited enough that they could get like a lower rating. It's not like PG or like, there's still nudity. There's still some sex, but just like the sex scenes are cut down much smaller. Most of the, like any of the parts that were there just to be porny and not to forward the plot are gone. So like a lot of scenes where like people fall into bed together, we see them do that. And then we cut to the next day or whatever. Whereas in the original, there was an actual sex scene. What you are left with is just a very bad movie. Because it only had one thing going for it. and they took it out. And I've discovered it in a lot of places, and frequently they have a slightly different title. So you can actually find it on IMDb because there's like the edit of it. But it means that you'll find stuff and they're like, yes, this feature length film is 49 minutes long. And I'm like, is it? And for a while I was like, this will be fine. And then I watched them and I'm like, so it's everything I hate about shitty 90s softcore porn and nothing I like about it.
So all right. So it sounds like what happened was someone watched this and said, it's good, but the narrative keeps being interrupted by this sex scene that's just overly long, and it's almost like people are watching it for the sex scene and not for the plot. And the person said, "Gosh, you're right. Why don't we cut all that out?"
And originally, it was just Amazon because Amazon had everything, but yeah. Then they were like, no, we're going to do shorter versions. Everyone's like, what the hell is your problem, Amazon? And Amazon's just like, if we think it's too explicit, we'll take it. So they were presuming that it was that. And then it became this fun game for me because, like, if a movie's old enough, you'll see it in its full detail. This only is like an era of film where they decided to do this. But I'm starting to see signs that a lot of streaming services and things like that are like, this is dumb. Because you don't get the benefit of not carrying the porn, which would, you know, make conservative focus groups and things happier. So you don't get that benefit, but you still manage to piss off all the people who would actually want it there. And to be honest, like, the only reason I'm interested in is there's a nostalgia factor. I think I've talked about this before. Sometimes experiencing or thinking about things that as a teenager aroused me can arouse me now, even though it was dumb and teenager-y. Like when I was younger, if I saw boobs, I'm like, oh my God. And nowadays I'm like, the internet there, whatever, that's not. And so essentially the only titillation I get is from sort of the nostalgia factor. So I'm barely caring about seeing these already. So I'm like, who is this for?
Well, it's like I say, they clearly don't care about the explicit nature of it. They must have thought that it improved the art, because here's the thing. I don't know what kinds of things you're talking about, except I do know that sometimes for me, just for a normal thing, a love scene or whatever completely takes me out of it. It interrupts the story. It's like, I would be happy if they fell in the bed and then they cut to something else. But I understand that for some people, this is an important part of it. Well,
and there are plenty of movies and TV that do that. And that's how it works.
And I also understand that the concept of, well, now we're not just going to have a sex scene. We're going to basically take a break from the movie to have a little bit of softcore porn. I mean, that's really important. It's like a porn commercial break in the middle of the story. Okay.
And in reality, it's actually porn. And then in between, we're just making up a very little plot to.
I get it. But from the concept of a person who's like interested in the story, it's just a big distraction. So someone must have thought, we can improve this artistically if we cut out some of this stuff in the middle and get on with the story right after, completely ignoring the fact that to the person who consumes this media, this is what they're here for, really. Like you said, the plot is the commercial break, not the sex scene.
And someone just having such a hard time envisioning that person.
Except it's a version of me.
Except, but that's the thing. And don't get used to this, because I will probably never say this again, but you're not that stupid.
No. But, I mean, you can imagine someone who thinks a little bit that way, who works for Amazon, who thinks they have a brilliant idea and thinks, hey, I think we could improve these things narratively if we did this. I mean,
no, that's what I'm saying is I can't picture that.
I can
picture a person who says these films are worthless, get them off our service. And honestly, I think that's a valid argument. And I can see people who are like, people watch it, why would we care? But people who are like, no, there's definitely something worth saving here, but it's not the sex.
Okay.
I'm like, really?
Don't imagine it as a person then. Imagine it as a committee of people.
Even to me, that's right up with like, you know what? Saudi Arabia is a backwards, messed up, misogynist, racist culture. We should just do away with the whole thing. Huge violent revolution. But let's keep the bit about how women can't drive. Because I feel like that's really the heart of the country, and that's what everybody's been behind the whole time.
Well,
it's like that to me. I'm like, I don't. It's such a niche. It's so quickly from there's something wrong with these movies to let's just not watch these movies. Even also, for me,
also
who's looking for porn. So the space in between where you're like,
yes, but you don't want to get rid of content. You don't want to get rid of something that'll possibly make money. You want to increase the number of people who will watch it. And in this case,
and this is what I'm hoping is happening, is they did try that, and now they're learning that we won't all be fooled. And so more and more. Well, I'm seeing more and more streaming services who they usually aren't explicit about it, but they're basically like, check out our service because we just show you all the trashy stuff.
Do you think there is a person, though, a consumer, who doesn't mind nudity, but they just think if you have an extended sex scene, that's too much? Like that's the line that they don't want to cross. Like they see everybody naked, or they see little brief sex scenes, but as soon as the sex scene is too long, they're out.
I do believe these people exist.
Okay.
I also believe across the board that they are smart enough to say, also, these movies suck. That's the thing is like, yeah, I'm like all the opinions you can have about these movies, I'm fine with, but you have to add in also you only have a working brain stem and nothing else. So you think there's a point to these movies outside of it and people around you are okay with it. I mean, you know, dumber shit has happened. I'm sure. Hell. A lot of how the government's been run recently has been dumber than this, but it still just throws me because I'm like, anybody confused about why these movies exist?
Well, I don't think so, but I also think that I can easily imagine a person not really understanding that audience or thinking they could capture a different audience. Like maybe somebody actually thinks this plot is interesting, but they are only going to hold on to watch the whole movie if it's got as much of this stuff in it. I mean,
I feel like in 20 or 30 years, I'm going to see a documentary about how it actually had to do with like a bet Pete Rose and Donald Trump made that accidentally got put into law or something. It feels like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, that could, you know, who knows?
Feels like a very specific bargain somebody made that does not play it out well at all.
But I mean, we've seen a lot of, like you said,
into an industry. Like the fact that they have different titles now, if they're the edited version, I'm like, this is a thing that gets put out now.
But no one's making new ones. No one's sitting down making a terrible story and just not putting as much sex in it.
No. They are making new ones, but then they're making softcore porn films are still happening. But then also edited versions of them.
So there is an audience then.
What really bugged me is I see these one and I'm like, I want to see the real one. And the only place I can find the real one is on an actual hardcore porn site where somebody's put it on there. And I mean, I'll tell you, if I'm already at that site, I'm not interested in a 90s softcore film.
Right.
It's like you may really enjoy Totino's Party Pizza. But if you go to the trouble of going to the fancy wood fire grilled homemade pizza place, and they also are like, by the way, we'll give you a Tortino's party pizza if you
probably
want
not,
instead.
Probably not going to do that, no.
No. And it's a video aggregation site, so there's no like, can I take that home for later?
That's probably the first and last time that a porn site is going to be compared to a gourmet pizza joint.
No. Spoken like a person who does not watch porn.
Okay.
Or eat a lot of junk food. the parallels between the pornography industry and Totino's entire business model.
Oh,
very similar.
I see. Okay.
Let's do a question because this is getting weird. We've been talking a lot about porn and stripping and stuff. So, all right. We have some things. We have a thing from Jazz. I don't know why I said that like I was Ray Romano. Deborah! You know that a Ray Romano impression and a Kermit the Frog impression are remarkably close.
Hmm.
Like if you hear somebody do both of them, they are right nearby each other.
Yeah.
All right. This is the subject of this with no capitalization whatsoever is most important thing in a story? Question mark.
What is
so the already just thing? A linguistic and syntactical nightmare. Only half a sentence, but Jazz says, on the Graboids debriefing episode, way to remind me that I named an episode that. I've been having trouble with my episode titles lately. Y'all were talking about how important plot holes or general narrative logic, I think that describes it, is to both of you. I was thinking that plot holes don't bother me as much because I'm dead inside and a terrible human being. Sorry. I was thinking that plot holes don't bother me as much, and that got me wondering about what is most important for me. I decided that it was whatever I think the overall message of the story is.
Mm.
If something has what I think is a harmful message, then it's a deal breaker most of the time as far as to whether I enjoy the story. Are plot holes the most important for you? Or is there a different most important thing if there is one at all?
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Do tell.
I'm not even sure what question. There were about four questions. So.
Oh.
Yes. What do you think, Mr. Ram?
I seem to recall you once saying on the podcast that character was the most important thing to you, and I'm not sure if that's still true. Is it still true? I think you said that. Maybe.
I think I have probably said that character sympathy is most important for me. I have again and again said if it's a movie or a show where I don't sympathize with anybody, or more importantly, don't care what happens to anyone involved.
Right, you're right. That's what you said. That's what you said. I think I took it as a broader character arc and character development thing.
There is, and I think I there are definitely pieces of media with stories whose logic don't hold together. And I am sometimes fine with that. Some of it is not that that's what I enjoy most. I think it's a compulsive thing. I can't not see the holes, and they're distracting to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if I feel, here's a good example. I mean, and this is a problem I've discovered. When I go and see a movie in the theater, I'm way more likely to think I liked it when I walk out of the theater. I don't know why, but we saw the second Matrix movie, and I walked out of there thinking I really enjoyed it. But I was aware even then that the story didn't make a goddamn lick of sense. And I specifically was like, I enjoyed this as a visual spectacle. It was the epitome to me of style over substance. I now realize it was actually a very specific artist's vision that I just really didn't like. Because I don't anymore feel this way about it. But I have movies, and I also am a big believer in ambiguous endings. So when I think, oh, this story is being played very loosely, or this story has some gaps, and that was clearly on purpose because either they're trying to say something with that, or their message is outside the frame of plot. I am fine with that. Ending of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, great example I always throw up there. It ends incredibly ambiguously, and I am good with that. It's when a plot hole or a story issue exists that just feels like they couldn't be fucking bothered. Or that they were just too dumb to see it staring them in the face. If story is not what you're going for, and I can tell that, and you're doing something else, you're doing message, you're doing mood, you're doing character, whatever, you're doing joke, I can appreciate that. But if there's times where I'm like, that didn't have to not make sense. Like, you're not gaining anything by leaving this vague, or you're not, you know, you're just being vague for the sake of being vague, which I hate, or you're just being vague because you're an idiot and don't realize it's vague. Like, you have made assumptions about your story. And I mean, and especially nowadays, because I'm a victim of it myself, people write shit and there are plot holes. Always. My book had tons of plot holes. My book had plot holes right up to the very last draft. And I'm sure it still has plot holes. And there are plot holes that I've only sort of hand waved for a moment that I'm still going to have to resolve in later books. And I think those matter. I don't think those necessarily make it better or worse, but of course I need to think about this shit. I wrote something in chapter 30 that contradicts something I wrote in chapter 4. Cause guess what? I wrote chapter 4 months ago, but at some point I got to deal with that. Because they're only 26 chapters apart, even though for me it's like 6 months away. Like,
right.
So it's mostly the, I don't like people being too casual with the story or too lackadaisical with the story. If you are very intentionally saying, the story's not important, then I can work with you. You can still get that wrong. But if you make it clear that, like, the actual plot here isn't what this is about, then I can be like, okay, what is it about? But times where it's like, oh yeah, that doesn't make sense, I just couldn't be bothered. Or what happens more and more is, no, this is incredibly important, so really you just need to forget about 3 episodes ago, because the entire plot is hinging on this. Mm. And the fact that it is contradicted, too fucking bad. It could be to my detriment. It doesn't help that I watch a lot of things that pick apart movies and TV shows. So there are movies out there that I'm like, I bet if I could come to this with fresh eyes, I would enjoy it. But I've seen too many videos making fun of how stupid this story is that I couldn't possibly watch it again and not see how stupid the story is. Matrix is a great example. I don't think I can enjoy any of the Matrix movies anymore, including the ones I haven't seen, because I'm just like, it doesn't fucking work. There's a lot of dumb shit in there. I'm glad they existed, all that, but yes, I value story, and to me story is largely plot, and if I feel you are not treating it with enough respect, I am annoyed. If you are eschewing convention, cool, all right, I am prepared to give my response to this based on what I think are your rules, which again, and it can go so far as to, I'm like, I saw a porn film and it was really good, and part of the reason it was good is the actors in it were really good for porn actors. Like, the actual parts that had story, I actually believe them. That's huge for me, even though that's not what it's about. I'm like, they actually took the time to care about the story. Maybe that's what it comes down to. I don't like things where it seems like the person involved didn't take much care with their story, and the most common way that shows up is they couldn't be bothered to notice huge fucking plot holes. And I mean, I don't know. I do wonder. There are tricky ones. Hunger Games is one that sticks with me. I have a lot of issues with Hunger Games, having never read the books and only seen the first movie. But you came away from it pissed off.
I did.
You just had a stick up your butt, and that stick was called, "This is not what oppressed people would do after a war." And at the time, I was like, "Wow, you've got a real specific gripe," but it got into me. And over the years, I've been like, "Yeah, everything everybody does in this movie—the poor people and the rich people—is dumb as hell," and they're all like incredibly ignorant of like what society they're living in, and also and ever since then, I'm just like, "Nope." And that wasn't really the point. It was supposed to be a piece of speculative fiction. And maybe that's it, too. If you can give me a short story that doesn't hold together, I'm like, that was thought-provoking, because whatever your little speculative twist was, that makes me thinking later. By the time you're on your fourth movie, I'm like, it should have made sense by now.
You know, that's interesting you should say that, because when I think of it as a think of the whole premise as a short story, it works for me too, because I accept that short stories are more like thought experiments, right?
Yes. Yes.
And as a thought experiment, you get to do all kinds of cheating.
Also, if you're trying to make a point about a very specific feature.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to, the stupid Justin Timberlake movie where everybody has their life amount on their arm and time is the currency. That movie makes zero sense. I mean, in any sense, they don't. But it started off being like, yeah, what if everybody's lifespan was just on their arm and you traded in time? What about that? And I'm like, whoa, what about that? Right. I mean, obviously, we couldn't do that because of the way physics and society and living beings work. But, right. Ooh, what if we did?
Because when it's a thought experiment, it's more like an analogy, and analogies don't have to be perfect. They just have to make their point. So I think you're right about that. I think if these things were just short stories, and I think I do get short stories. I get that it's a thought experiment. It's just, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to blow it out into a real thing.
Short stories can also suck.
No. That's true, because they can fail at doing what they're supposed to do. But when you take something that would work as a short story and turn it into even one movie or one novel, you're going to start having real problems.
I believe that short stories do not get enough respect in our society in general, including from me.
Yeah.
Like, I should be writing more short stories. But no, I have a constant thing, and this has actually become a very common criticism I and my wife will give about a movie or something. Will be like, that would have been a real good episode of Outer Limits, but it was dumb as a feature length thing. Or that would have been a really good a half hour anthology show. There you go. But like, for example, so there's the time thing, and the only time the movie with the time is now your time is here. Here's our premise. Nothing else changes. So nothing really makes sense, but whatever. Same thing happened in a little Bruce Willis movie called Surrogates.
Mm.
But the thing about Surrogates is they were like, we're living in a world where everybody can just virtually jack into a perfect body and wander around and do whatever the fuck they want. It's like VR, but things are happening in real life. And then that's it. And then like, oh, and a murder happens, and it's tricky because we're all in these bodies and we don't go outside. But immediately it's like, why? If it's VR, why does it need to be physical? Also, as it went on, the infrastructure is still in place for people to go out and do things in their real life. But we make a real big point of how no one does that. Like, well, then why are you building these places? Like, like, they just had the one idea, but they wanted to make it feature length. And also, they didn't really care about the idea. Like, well, at least the stupid Justin Timberlake movie, like, the fact that time matters and is your life essence and is a commodity was what the whole movie was about.
Right. Not every idea builds a whole world. Some ideas build a story.
And not every idea, even good idea, can necessarily guarantees a good project.
Right.
I think in general, translating things is hard. Books are books. Movies are movies. TV shows are TV shows for a reason. They tell stories different.
Yep. That's right.
And especially the book to movie one exhausts me. I'm at the point where I have to pick a side. When a movie is coming out about a book, I have to decide I'm going to watch the movie or I'm going to read the book, because they aren't going to be the same. And it's going to annoy me that the second one I pick is not the same as the first one either way.
Well,
so I really need to pick now.
More to the point, if they're both going to be good, they will not be the same.
I had to learn this lesson hard. I used to be like, oh, a movie's coming out, I have to read the book first. It screwed up the Coraline movie. It screwed up pretty much all the Harry Potter movies for me. It killed Watchmen. It killed the entire, like, that movie was bad enough it made me hate the property. Admittedly, HBO did a TV show that then made me hate it a lot less again. But again, it was so different from both of the previous things. We've strayed a little bit here, but I think this is the thing. I think plot can equate roughly to story, and I think story is always important. And so if somebody wants to deliberately swerve it, that's fine. But if somebody just can't be bothered because they're too busy making the cool slow-mo action scenes look right, nope.
As far as what's most important to me, now, again, my relationship with fiction is, I think, very different than most people's. So when I'm consuming fiction, I mean, I'm going to notice all the things. I'm going to notice the acting. I'm just going to notice these things. Sometimes I'll notice them and like them. Sometimes I won't like them. It doesn't bother me if I don't like them. I mean, because who am I? I just don't like it. What bothers me as a viewer or reader or whatever is if it takes me out of it. But I think that means something different for me than other people, because I don't think I ever get in it the way other people do. But there's just something distracting about it.
Yeah.
And the thing about that is, though, I do understand that in some other day or at some other time, it might not distract me. So it just, you know, that day I went to the movies, or that day I was watching on TV, sometimes it's impacted by who I'm watching with. So I understand that if it distracts me, it's distracting me then. But it distracted me, and so I'm going to talk about that with you or whoever else. And it's also going to impact my overall enjoyment of the thing. I don't think I put anything over another in terms of importance. I've noticed for a long time, I thought that maybe I cared about plot more than other things, but I noticed, no, I just care about plot more than other people do. I don't really care about plot more than character or plot more than whatever. So I think at the end of the day, for any show or book or whatever, and books are more complicated because you're usually reading those over a few days, right? So they have to-
But
they
you have the time to be able to do nuance much
right,
more.
Right. Also, maybe you won't pick it up until you're in a certain mood or whatever. But for whatever it is, what I think the thing that I am going to value most from it is if the more it gets me thinking about other things, the better. You know what I'm saying? If I look at it or watch it or read it, and then I can just forget everything about it the next day. I mean, I might have positive things to say about it because I might have liked the acting. I might have liked all this stuff about it, but it's not going to be something that I'm going to say that I liked.
No. And it actually is telling. Sometimes people will be like, how'd you like it? And I was like, you know what? Yesterday I really liked it. I realize now, though, I've forgotten almost everything about it. So maybe not.
Maybe not. But if
the opposite, I hated it, but now I've forgotten why. So,
but like Star Wars, for example, there are only a few objective things I can say about the original Star Wars that I think is brilliant. Some of the visual stuff and pretty much all of the sound stuff, including the soundtrack. The sound on that was genius. And I think people totally not very many people appreciate how important sound was to that whole film being successful, but also many of the visual things. But a lot of the rest of it, it's not good. It's just a, like from a craft, from the standpoint of film craft, just isn't good. The script isn't that good. The actors did the best they could. I don't fault them, but sometimes it's just, you know, it just doesn't make it. However, Star Wars is inspiring to me, not just, in fact, it wasn't that inspiring to me when I watched it as a kid, honestly. I mostly liked it because my brother did. I didn't get inspired by Star Wars until later, and it still inspires me, and so I like it. I can recognize all the bad things.
To start calling you Sheev?
I'm making a point that a thing, I can have a lot of technical problems with a thing and still like it.
Oh, yeah.
And why? Why is that? It's because Star Wars does do something to my imagination. It does make me think about things. It does inspire me to think about new things. It inspires me to tell my own stories a little bit. And not everything I read or watch or whatever does that. I am also concerned, as Jazz is, with the messaging. When Jazz and I did a podcast together, that's what we talked about, because we are both concerned about those things. But I have to be honest and say, for me personally, just the thing that's going, if I'm going to get excited about a thing, recommend it to other people, you know, have buy a copy of it and put it in my collection and watch it or read it or something more than once, it's because it gets me to also write something or say something or create something. You know, the reason I've read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein more than once isn't just because I like it. It's my favorite, you know, novel. It's because of why it's my favorite novel, which is it's just page after page and line after line. It just excites my thinking. It just ignites my creativity. It just makes me want to do my own thing.
Create artificial life.
It's just so good in that way for me. And there are a few other things like that. Like we talked about Nathaniel Hawthorne earlier, because, you know, I had this thick book of his short stories, and they're short stories, right? Which that's like you were saying, we really don't appreciate short stories enough. And they were so brilliant, and they were so interesting, and they excited so many of my own thoughts and creativity that, you know, that's what I like. So that's probably the most important thing to me. It feels a little narcissistic to say, but
no, I think it's important. I'm working more and more on how did I feel about this movie and how much of that is clearly me. There are plenty of movies I've really enjoyed that nowadays I have to be like, I don't think there's anybody I want to recommend that to. Or yeah, just right. The other night, we actually watched on Amazon Prime, you can watch now, The People We Hate at the Wedding. And I had been curious by the trailer. It's Allison Janney and Kristen Bell and Ben Platt. And it's sort of a family comedy. It's a little sort of mumblecore-ish. And we watched it. I enjoyed it. It was kind of fun. I didn't love it. I won't ever watch it again. I'm not going to recommend it to any of you. But then I was like, but I think I know some family members who would like it, because it's just like the right level of like funny and inoffensive in certain ways that I think it could work. But make no mistake, I'm not saying it's a good movie. But I'm like, if you want something low stakes and you think Kristen Bell and Allison Janney make good comedic actors, which I do, give it a watch for fun. But like, that's the thing where I would recommend that to some people. I'm not going to go out and say it's a good movie that in general I think people should like. This is very big for me, and this has been a thing that has pissed me off with so many other people, and I'm finally being better about it. You cannot say this movie is good. Everyone should see this movie. Stop saying that, William.
I don't say
you that. Have to say, I really enjoyed this movie. Yes. For these reasons.
Right.
People
right.
who also enjoy these reasons / are fine with these bad reasons will like this movie. And I understand we're all fallible humans, and maybe we get wrong what if I'm like, this movie is good for these reasons, and I think William is a person who would like those reasons, so William should watch it. And afterwards, William's like, I also like thought I would like it for those reasons, but I did not. I think you might be confused either about what this movie's like or what you think I like. And that I'm like, okay, fine. Whatever. We call that pulling a Bates Motel. And it happens.
I knew you were going to bring that up. I knew it.
Of course I am. I bring that up everywhere. No, it is. It is honestly the best example for this concept that I have, because I genuinely understand why you recommended it and why you thought it would be good. And I genuinely did not enjoy it. And when I explained to you why, you very clearly were like, oh, of course. Like, as soon as I told you why I hated it, you were like, yeah, that makes sense, because that's all there and you hate that.
Yeah.
But you were just thinking in other terms, and you explained all the reasons you had thought I would like it. And I'm like, I do like those things, and I did see those things, but it did not outweigh this.
Those things.
Yeah. I feel like it's a great example of you genuinely were paying attention to that show and thinking carefully about me, and you just through simple human error. It wasn't for lack of trying or lack of discernment. It was just human error of like, oh, I didn't think about this versus this too.
Well, there was another piece, though, a more selfish piece, which was, I also, I'm sure, thought if you could appreciate those things that I was appreciating, then we could talk about it in a way that I like to talk to you about things.
Yes.
And that maybe I couldn't talk to other people in that same way about it.
And it is hard when you love something. But like it, there are things that I want to be like, this was amazing, everybody should watch this. And there are things I probably have said that about. The Princess Bride is one of the greatest movies of all time. I don't know what's wrong with you, as you're telling. But this is, I'm getting better at this. Even if I'm like, oh, this is amazing, I have to be like, okay, you found it amazing. Why? And then how does that translate to other people? And I've even straight out, some people give me a lot of recommendations and they seem to be sort of willy-nilly, and I've had to sit them down and be like, when you're recommending something to me, are you saying this is really good, or are you saying this is something I think you Tony would enjoy? And some of them haven't considered that before and have to really think about it, and so that's a thing I try and work on more and more nowadays. Things I like and things I don't like, and why I don't like it. One of my early ones, I haven't rewatched it, so I don't know. I was a very big fan of Eyes Wide Shut.
Mm.
A lot of people were not a big fan of that movie.
Mm.
And that was one of the very earliest ones I had to come to terms with the fact that, like, this has personal significance for me in specific, not just thematically, but I think the time in my life when I saw it and what that meant, like, had an impact on me. And since then, I've heard people talk about how bad that movie is. And there's a lot to complain about with that movie. And I'm like, that's fair. I'm not even going to say it's a good movie. I'm just going to say I really like it. But I absolutely understand why people don't like it.
I think I probably have benefited. For one thing, I think that the thing I find most important about consuming nonfiction is the same as fiction. I want it to inspire me to think new things, fiction and nonfiction both. But I think I benefited maybe from being an early fan of critics when I was I watched Siskel and Ebert from the time I was, I don't know, 6-7 years old or whatever. And when you consume, when you're a consumer of like film critics, music critics, or whatever, you learn to find critics, not that you always agree with, but that you understand.
Yeah.
So if the critic hates this film, oh, I know I'm going to like it because I understand what that critic likes and doesn't like. And in this case, I know that I'm going to like that film. So it's you don't look for people that you agree with. You look for people who you understand what their taste is. You understand when they like this kind of thing, I'm going to like it. When they don't like this kind of thing, I'm also not going to like it. And you kind of get a feel for it. And I think that's helped me understand just taste, just like people have different tastes and things.
But
you can't generalize.
Making me think something here. And I don't want to speak for you. I'll just speak for me here. Maybe because I am very focused on the why. When I watch something, I just don't say I didn't like it. Right? I need to go, what did I like about it? What didn't I? My brain can't not be doing that.
Mm.
And maybe if your brain is determined to be that analytical about a TV show or a movie or a book, issues like plot holes are going to stand out more because you're thinking about it more, and therefore maybe. It bothers you more.
Maybe.
As opposed right. to, and I've done this on rare occasions, just taking a movie or a TV episode or whatever, just sort of the gestalt, just how did I feel afterward? Let's not get into what provoked what. Let's just purely do like, what was I thinking about? What was I feeling? And that sounds really cool. That's not how I can think. I'm never not analyzing anything. Movies, TV shows, our conversation, podcasts, what I talked about yesterday.
Yeah, me too. Which annoys so many people.
But then maybe that brings those out more. Maybe it throws into outline these plot holes that we only are bothered by because we are paying so much specific attention in ways that other people aren't bothered to. Again, compulsion.
And I had an argument about this with someone once because of everything you just said, I often get, you know, William, can't you just enjoy the thing? And of course, my answer is, this is how I enjoy it. One way I tried to explain it to someone was, I don't just read books. I read everything. I read the TV show. I read the movie. I said that because I thought they could understand, because for them, I think they made that point. They said, well, I read books, but I don't read these things. And I said, well, I do read them. That's the point. They still didn't.
Well, and it even shows up in how I read. I know a lot of people that read much faster than me and very intentionally are like, I can get one or two words in a sentence. That's the important part. Whereas I will catch myself dropping to the bottom of a paragraph because I can already tell from the writing style, they're just going into greater lengths to describe the room and I don't care or whatever. And I will stop myself and be like, no, they wrote those fucking words. Go back and read them. I caught myself doing that just a couple of days ago.
I read very slowly. I'll read a page and then I'll think about it. I mean, and to me, that's a good book if it makes me stop every page or every paragraph and think about what they're saying. To me, that's
also on both the giving and the receiving end. I think as a species, we need to get more comfortable with, Tony, can't you just stop analyzing it and enjoying it? And me saying, no, I try. It's kind of a bummer. Sounds like you really enjoyed this movie. I can't. I guess that's a failing on my part, but there's probably other movies that's just what happened. Like the whole deal with the separating the art from the artist and how I have trouble doing that. When I find out that an actor or a writer is really shitty, I have a hard time enjoying their stuff anymore. I'm not trying to prove a point. I would love to still enjoy a lot. I don't like not liking things.
Yeah. Like, right.
I'm not like, oh, you know what's fun is to be real obnoxious about this thing they did and therefore invalidate their entire body of work. No, I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
just because I literally listened to pre-cancellation Louis C.K. the other day on the radio, and it just, I'm hearing things I didn't hear before and I just didn't. And I'm like, that's 100% on me. Absolutely. Knowing that does not mean then I can be like, oh, no, I'll just enjoy it. No. Sometimes I can't, and too fucking bad. And also, sometimes can't you just stop and use your goddamn brain for a minute to see there's subtext in this film that you're missing?
Mm-hmm.
I had somebody the other day didn't watch a thing because they didn't like the initial character of one of the main characters. And I was like, I get that, and that's fine. And I certainly don't think it's a good enough movie to go back to if you didn't enjoy the beginning. You are aware that negative characterization was on purpose. And in fact, that character growing from that point is largely the story, right?
That's largely.
And they did. And unfortunately, by the end, I think I had accidentally talked them into watching it because I'm like, you don't have to. I didn't like it is a perfectly valid reason. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, the movie was made to introduce you to something you didn't like and then make it better as a lot of movies are. So if you didn't like that thing, you knew that was going to change, right? It wasn't just going to be like, here's a person whose life sucks and here's 2 hours. Like, no, I wouldn't have recommended it if that was that. But again, like, I don't like most rape revenge stuff, even though, the bad guys, I'm like, no, I didn't like the one part, even if the movie, this can be a thing, even if the message is rape is bad, I'm like, I can still not enjoy the movie.
Yeah, right.
So these are all things, and I think we all need to get better at realizing the subjectivity of any critique we give, and sure, get more into the why. Like, yeah, I didn't like X about the movie. And then we can have a conversation. The only reason we can't, if I say, I didn't like that all the characters were so mean and I couldn't sympathize, and you're like, really? I find all the characters really nice and I really related. Then we have a problem. But if it's like, I found all these characters mean and unsympathetic, and you're like, I did too, but this aspect of the movie made me like it, then I can be like, I can understand that. That was a good aspect. This character thing was too much of a problem for me. And you're like, I can get why, if that would piss you off, this would be a bad movie. Like, then we're having an interesting conversation. If it's just right, like, this movie sucks, I don't know, I thought this movie was awesome. Okay, you're wrong. Like, end of conversation. That's not why.
So let's talk about Ghost Rider.
No, I actually still fight the urge to watch the second one sometimes. I think the second one was when they just gave up, and I'm kind of into
it. Pretty bad. It was pretty bad.
I like, they just went, but they went balls to the wall. They were just like, well, we're fucking Ghost Rider.
I mean,
we don't care if it makes sense.
If you've got Nicolas Cage in your movie, I mean, why hold back?
Right? All right. We are over time, and I have spent most of my day with William now. So,
yep.
I would like that to be
done. But nobody should do that.
Also, if any of you are listening or watching, you should already experience this. We are objectively a terrible podcast, and yet you keep listening. You must appreciate something that the masses do not, and that I don't. Because I think it's awful. But please keep listening. The cops are here. William has to go. It's probably a fire truck. Listen again next week. Go to the blog and tell us your thoughts on movies and stuff like that. There was some very interesting conversation last week that I just discovered this morning. It's been a rough couple. I don't know what. Seriously, it's Thursday, right? I do not understand that it is Thursday. That makes no sense.
It is
Thursday. Anyway, also write into the hat so that you can cause us to have these conversations. It's a weird way of putting that. themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. Puppet us, with your emails. Also go to azatheater.com and look up all of William's crap. Go to smashwords.com and get the book Odd Wings. It's no longer on sale anymore, so it costs $3 again. You can do it. I have faith in you. Give me $3. Also, Princess Bride is a great movie. That's the big one I wanted to
cover.
Get that in Princess there. Bride, incredible movie that I literally have memorized. I can't give an objective critique of it. I have the movie memorized. That movie and the first two Beverly Hills Cops, I am unable to give an even remotely objective critique of. But if people say I hate the Beverly Hills Cop movies, I'm like, I can understand why a person would. If they say they hit Princess Bride, I'm like, you're a demon here to lead astray all of humanity. So anyway, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and tell Azure Talon the truth about Princess Bride, because he's clearly wrong. There was also another movie in there that he talked about that I don't give a shit about. So you can correct him on that too. I don't know, but I have forgotten what it even is. But Princess Bride. Also, listen next week. Also, 2023. Adding some gravitas. This this year. We're going to be very serious when we... Damn it. Okay, now apparently you have two jobs. Remember what episode number it is and don't fuck up the ending.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.